Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Wisconsin Badgers Journal Sentinel podcast joins you once again after the Badgers take care of New Mexico. After two games of the 2018 season, they're right where you'd expect them to be at 2-0. They beat New Mexico 45-14 on Saturday at Camp Randall Stadium. Yeah, there were a few things to be a little bit concerned about. They were trailing after the first quarter 7-3 and only led at halftime 10-7. So plenty to discuss, both good and bad. Of course, they do end up pulling away, wearing down the Lobos to remain undefeated on the short season. We are going to be talking with Badgers Journal Sentinel beat reporter Jeff Patricus to break down this game, talk about the highlights, the lowlights, and where they go from here as they prepare for BYU next Saturday at Camp Randall Stadium in Madison. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, Wisconsin Badgers podcast. We've got a lot to discuss. Before we go any further, though, I need you to find us on Apple Podcasts or iTunes, or even I don't know if they have a rating mechanism for Stitcher or Google Play or wherever else you can find podcasts. We should be all those places. But leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. That really helps our cause. It helps us reach more people. And if it's good, hopefully it's good. 5 stars. Love to see the 5 stars. If you feel you want to add a little constructive criticism in there as well, hey, I'm all ears. Whatever you want to do, just let us know what you think. And that's a great place to do it. If you would rather find me on Twitter, you can do that. I'm at J.R. Radcliffe. J.R.R.A.D.C.L.I.F.F.E. Let me know what you think we could do better, or if you like it just fine, that's great with me, and we will certainly try to implement any feedback we get. This Badgers game, really interesting for the first 2.5 quarters before things started to get a little bit more familiar. Of course, the Badgers defense played really well. They buckled down big time after New Mexico took the opening kickoff, held on to it for 7.5 minutes, and scored to take the early lead. The caveat is that the starting quarterback for New Mexico, a very dynamic player, Tavaka Tuioti, was injured and did not return. So New Mexico was playing with its backup for the majority of the game. Sherrion Jones kind of did what he could, but the Badger D had no trouble with him. So you want to acknowledge that the defense definitely played well throughout the course of the game. And at the same time, you kind of know that asterisk is lingering there as well. So I'd be interested to know what Jeff Patricus, what he thinks of the defense's performance especially after the quarterback went out. Let's take a look at the stats from this game, Badgers against New Mexico. Alex Hornibrook, 8 of 11 passing for 148 yards with a touchdown and an interception. That interception was a big deal. It was in the third quarter and about midway through. You know, you look at this final score and you try to remember that moment in the third quarter when New Mexico ended up with the ball deep in Badgers territory. It felt like a very different game from what it ultimately ended up being. New Mexico had a chance to take a lead on Wisconsin midway through the third. Didn't happen. Scott Nelson's interception really turned the tide and the Badgers started rolling from there, but that was a tough moment in the game. One of a couple big turnovers that the Badgers were guilty of on Saturday. How about Danny Vandenboom getting into the game? Kimberly High School's own 1 of 1 passing with the touchdown to Taj Mustafa. Kind of an exciting start to his career. And of course, the question then is Jack Cohn, the backup quarterback, how are they going to use him? They pretty clearly want to see if they can get a red shirt for him, but with 4 games to play with this year, the new rule that you can play in 4 games and still get the red shirt. The question is, when do you use them? Do you use them early in the season to see what you've got, or do you use them later in the season, bigger games, when you might actually need somebody to be a very credible, field general for a couple games maybe, and still be able to use the red shirt there. So that's an interesting way that they have to figure out how to deploy him. In the running game, Jonathan Taylor had his customary monster game, 33 carries, 253 yards, and 3 scores. But Everything's got a but in this game, it seems. He also fumbled the ball deep in the red zone, a very costly fumble early in the game when the game was not out of hand. And it is something a lot of people are still talking about. That's the second week in a row Jonathan Taylor has lost a fumble. But it doesn't obviously seem to impact him. He came back and started piling up yards and a couple touchdowns after that moment. Tywon Deal, 9 carries, 57 yards. Alec Ingold gets into the end zone, had a big long run, finished with 4 carries, 47 yards, and a score. The big star of the game was A.J. Taylor in the passing game. Caught 5 balls for 134 yards and a score. Made a great one-handed catch. Looked very good. It was Kendrick Pryor last week. A.J. Taylor this week. The passing game should get a bump with Danny Davis coming back this third week after he served a 2-game suspension. We'll talk to Jeff how he thinks things are going to change in the passing game now that we see Davis in the mix as well. Xander Neville caught a ball in his first game back after a pretty bad injury last season. He is now back with the team. Same on defense. Isaiah Loudermilk working a lot in that first half. He came right back into the game and was right back in the mix. And I'm sure the Badgers were relieved to see him back on the field after he started the year on the sidelines. Dakota Dixon finishes as the team's top tackler with 9. Big game from Andrew Van Ginkle. He felt like he was everywhere. He had a sack, 1.5 tackles for loss, defended a pass. And Nelson mentioned that big interception. Zach Bond had 6 tackles. TJ Edwards is customarily everywhere. Loudermilk with a couple tackles. So it was definitely a good game, like we said, for the defense. And now they turn their attention to BYU. And here now is Jeff Patricus, the Wisconsin Badgers beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And Jeff, let's go right off the top. This was one of those no-win games as far as fans are concerned, because you either dominate the opponent beyond all description or, you know, you find some things that might worry you. Certainly the score belies how the first half went. Obviously, Wisconsin wore New Mexico down. First game jitters, totally forgivable. What should concern Badgers about a second slow start, and what shouldn't concern them after this game?
Well, you had a couple turnovers, which the head coach drives him crazy, including one in the red zone, which puts him over the top by Jonathan Taylor. He just does not tolerate turnovers. So a couple issues there you got to iron out. You had the defense was caught off guard a little bit by how New Mexico came out and ran the option early. Had to adjust to that. But one of the things I highlighted as I'm kind of looking back at the game is this is the second consecutive game that there were issues on kickoff return. I mean, they have a good offense. They expect to be able to move the ball, but you got to give your offense better field position than they've been getting. They're not even getting 20 yards per return. And that was a point of emphasis in the offseason that they really wanted to get some juice in that unit, and it has not come to fruition yet.
The defense obviously looked very good after that first drive of the game. They really only yielded a touchdown once the starters went out, but it's also not a secret that the New Mexico offense was hampered by the fact that their starting quarterback, kind of their best playmaker, definitely their best playmaker, went out early in the game, and that seemed to help the defense's cause. How big of a caveat is that? When you look at the defensive performance, do you have to take it all with a grain of salt because Tuioti was on the sideline, or do you have to give them credit for how they played throughout the majority of that game?
Well, it's clearly when you go from your first to your third string quarterback, because their second string guy got hurt in practice, that's going to make a big difference. I would have been curious to see what adjustments, you know, because like I said, they talked about the fact that New Mexico hadn't shown triple option in the first game. They came out in that look and kind of caught them off guard. I'm sure they would have adjusted to that. And just based on Jim Leonard's history and the history, you know, even when Justin Wilcox was here in Aranda, this has been a team that generally, if they get off to a little bit of an uneven start defensively early, they've been able to adjust. So my guess is they probably, no matter who was at quarterback, would have been much better defensively as the game went on.
The offense, they may not have, you know, scored a lot of points in that first half. They didn't do a lot through the air. There were some shaky moments when they did, even though A.J. Taylor obviously ended up with a massive game. Do you think there's still a little bit of an eye on the schedule here, knowing that they're probably going to beat these first few opponents and that they're saving a lot of that playbook for what comes next in the Big Ten season?
Well, I think Alex Hornbrook attempted 11 passes. That should tell you pretty much all you need to know right there when they're just decided. You know, New Mexico had given up a ton of yards on the ground in its first game against Incarnate Word. They just decided, you know what, we're going to run it down their throats. Throw it when we have to, or, you know, throw in an occasional play-action pass, and we'll be just fine with that. Yeah, there's no matter what the season is, they generally don't show a lot of stuff early, and you kind of see it. They peel it back a little bit as the season goes on. They save certain things or come up with certain things for certain opponents.
So you mentioned this fumble by Jonathan Taylor deep in the red zone. Second game in a row where he's fumbled. You know, a lot was asked after the game, both to him and to Paul Christ, about those fumbles and his habit, the way that this has sort of become a habit. But where do you think the threshold is? Because there obviously they have other options. Tywan Deal got carries on the next drive after Taylor fumbled. But he's so talented, they're not going to sit him down for some of these bigger games, you would think. I mean, is there a point where the fumbles make him just too much of a liability? Because I feel like there has to be a certain amount of tolerance because Jonathan Taylor is just so special.
Well, they exhibited that tolerance by giving him 22 carries after he put the ball on the turf, the red zone. I mean, John Settle, and a lot of running backs coach do this. It happened to Melvin Gordon up in Minnesota several years ago, where there was a fumble. Running backs coach said, you know what, you're taking a series, you're two off. And sometimes, in that instance, it was a little bit where the coach was upset with Melvin. But generally what they've done with Jonathan, since he's a younger guy, is just say, okay, if you fumble it, just take a series or two off. Just collect your thoughts, relax, take a deep breath, get back out there and play better. And he did. And I looked at the replay of the hit. It appeared to me, he didn't get a really good angle on the replay, that the guy went low. Taylor only had his right arm wrapped around the ball, and he was able to pop it out that way.
As far as the passing game, everybody seems to be saying the same thing about Danny Davis possibly returning next week. One more weapon. Not necessarily that the passing game is going to suddenly pop or that it's going to have a different approach by any means, but, you know, one more weapon. Do you think that's true, or do you think with Davis back, we will see a lot of different – we will see some different offenses, some different looks?
Well, if the difference with Danny Davis is this. If you decide to go three wide receivers and Jake Ferguson and spread people out – you have Pryor, Taylor, and Davis. You don't have that now. And that is much more difficult for teams to cover than, say, Pryor, Taylor, and Krumholz, or Jack Dunn, or maybe Cruikshank. So that just gives you a third guy who's probably their best guy, I would say, at making contested catches. He did that in several games as a freshman. So he doesn't necessarily need separation, and Alex Hornibrook trust him very much that if there's tight coverage, he'll give him a chance to go up and beat the DB.
Speaking of DBs, what do you make of Madison Cone? Because he spent a little bit of time as the matchup corner with Fahyan Hicks. He kind of switched spots with Fahyan Hicks for a minute. Then he made a great interception in the middle of the field. I mean, he'll be more of a nickel, more of a slot guy, but could he conceivably see more time, you know, on the opposite side of Caesar Williams as the season goes on?
That would depend on whether Jim Leonard thinks he has a better option on the inside at the slot position. And right now, I don't think he does. So I would say no to that because, you know, Leonard made it clear that he thought Cone was their best option for what they like to do defensively on the slot. Now, some guys, as they get older, can play outside or inside. I think Hicks right now is at the point where they just want to have him focus on the outside. Now, that could change as the season goes on, but I think – for the most part, you're going to see Cone as a slot guy in the nickel.
Elsewhere on that defense, we saw a lot of Isaiah Loudermilk. You knew that he would be coming back kind of early in the week. It was pretty clear that he was going to be coming back this game. I think we originally thought maybe the BYU game. He played a ton in the first half. I think he had 12 snaps in that first quarter. Did it look like to you that he was back at full strength? I mean, afterward, he was very confident about how healthy he was. It seemed like he feels as close to 100% as he could be. Did it really look like to you that guy was back?
It looked like he had no ill effects, you know, lingering effects from the knee injury. He was mobile. He could turn. He could cut. He was quick off the ball. You know, and he talked to us about the fact that he dropped about 10 to 15 pounds in the offseason. That was his goal coming into the season, just get a little leaner and quicker. So, yeah, I mean, is he a finished product, what he was at the end of last year when he made some plays in the Orange Bowl? No. But I think that they're fortunate that they can get him two games last week and then BYU to get him as close to, you know, full speed mentally as they can for the Big Ten opener at Iowa.
Scott Nelson has an interception that felt like a huge moment at the time after New Mexico had intercepted the ball, worked deep into Badger territory, and then Nelson cuts the drive short. Everything turns from there. The Badgers start pouring it on. Was that as big a moment as it seemed? I mean, ultimately, you've got to figure the Badgers were going to win that game, and probably fairly convincingly. But what did you make of that moment? Is there such a thing as a turning point in a game where the spread winds up this large?
Yeah, that turn, because it was 10-7 Wisconsin. It could have been tied or 14-10 New Mexico. But the most important thing for me in the long run is that Scott Nelson showed you the type of plays he's capable of making, and it won't just be against New Mexico. I mean, if you watch that play, they line him up at the 2-yard line right in the middle of the field. The ball, line of scrimmage, I think it was a 24. So they line him up a little bit deeper than I've seen other guys before. I'm not sure why that is yet. I have to ask. But he made a good break on the ball, made a play. And we have seen him make that play in different situations throughout the spring and in camp. So those of us who got to watch him practice are not surprised he made a play like that in that situation. And it's not going to be his last big play.
Curious who gets your game ball. We've talked about a lot of guys. A.J. Taylor, we haven't talked as much about, and he obviously had the five big catches. Who's the guy that you would really hand your game ball to?
A.J. Taylor. I mean, you know, he's been, I'm not going to say carrying the wide receiver corps, but he's been leading them. He came on strong at the end of the last year. He's picked up, and one of the things I like about him is both in the opener and, you know, Saturday, he had a drop, two in the opener he thought he should have had, one Saturday. And in both games, he came back and put up really good numbers. And I think that's a good sign. Everyone talks about defensive backs needing to have a short memory if they get beat on a play. And I talked to AJ about that last week, that wide receivers, he said, I've got to have the same mindset. If I drop a ball, I cannot let it affect me the whole game. And I think that's a good sign for him that he's able to put that behind him.
This is the first time we've chatted since a couple more players left the team. Arrington Farrar early in the week, Patrick Johnson a little later in the week. You know, I think every player situation is different. Is there anything to note that from the fact that we've seen a bunch of players leave, or is that just common? It just feels like a weird time because the season has already begun. But and Farrar was such a highly regarded recruit, never really seemed like he clicked. But what do you sort of make of the number of players that have stepped away from the program?
They're pretty much different situations. For example, it started with Patrick Castle in the offseason deciding just to focus on his degree, and he would have been the number two right tackle. They really liked him, but he's basically a genius. I mean, he is an incredibly smart kid. There's one kid, in my opinion, that really left because he was disgruntled and upset with his situation and playing time, and that was Dante Carrier-Williams. Patrick Johnson, they liked him. He was the third safety. He would have played third safety coming out of camp. He had a bunch of injuries. He's got a situation at home he's got to deal with. And I know for a fact they haven't closed the door to him returning, but he's got issues beyond football he's got to address. Farrar is a guy who they could never find a position for, and he just decided at this point, you know what, I don't want to be the fourth or fifth outside linebacker and bang my head against the wall for 15 games. I'm going to worry about my degree. It would have taken a lot to see him on the field defensively.
Kind of an interesting finish to the game with Danny Vandenboom, Kimberly High School product, under center instead of when it was clear the game was in hand, Alex Hornibrook checking out. Vandenboom gets the touchdown pass, first career appearance, first career touchdown pass. Not Jack Cohn, who's kind of understood as the backup quarterback. And we've alluded to this before, sort of the tactical puzzle that the new redshirt rules have provided. Now that players can get up to action in up to four games, and it's really kind of on the coach and the player to try to figure out where to dole those four games out and still be able to keep a red shirt. So what do you think it is about Cohn? I mean, are they saving him for bigger games down the road? Is it as simple as that?
Well, I think if they can get away with a red shirt year, they can do that. I think, you know, in talking to a couple of assistants about the strategy, since this is new for everybody, the common, you know, and I think we talked about this last week, that the common thinking is, well, just throw guys in there early and see how they play. And that's not always the smartest thing to do, because first of all, you got to make sure they're ready to play. And second, for a guy like Cohn in his situation, say, you know, they don't use him until late in the season if something happens to Alex Hornibrook. Then you've got a guy who at least has some experience in games last year, a guy who you think has improved. He's a better player this year than he was a year ago, and you can use him down the stretch. If you want to get a redshirt year out of him, and you use him against New Mexico, against Western Kentucky, against BYU, and something happens to Hornibrook, you got to use Cohn the rest of the way.
So let's quickly look ahead to BYU. I don't know if you got a chance to see them play Saturday night. I know you were going to try to watch them.
I'm
operating under the assumption this will be a much tougher challenge than Western Kentucky or New Mexico. Where do you think they could give the Badgers problems?
Oh, you know, I looked at what they did against Cal, and they didn't play nearly as well against Cal as I think they expected to. They've got a better quarterback this year in Tanner Mangum. He was not available. He was out injured when Wisconsin went there to Provo last year. He's much better than what they had to offer last year, but he's coming off an Achilles injury from last November. He's mobile enough to move away from pressure, but he's not going to beat you consistently with his feet. The offensive line was a little leaky against Cal. I think Wisconsin should really get some pressure on him. And the, you know, they got a couple okay running backs. They'll try to pound the ball at Wisconsin. They're not game breakers. And I think the biggest thing with the passing game is they don't seem to have anyone who can take the top off of defense. No one who can stretch the field. So I'm guessing Wisconsin is going to see that and they're going to be able to condense the field and really kind of put the screws to BYU's defense or offense and see if they can really get after them. Defensively, it's a solid unit. Their linebackers are their best tacklers, but their linebackers aren't the fastest, especially the middle linebacker who got victimized for a touchdown pass by a tailback against Cal. So I think Wisconsin should be able to move the ball fairly consistently, and I really think BYU is going to struggle to move the ball against Wisconsin's defense. I think that's going to be tough for them.
All right, last one, the old journalist question of anything else. Anything else piquing your interest from this game or just with the Badgers program in general right now that we haven't discussed?
Well, I want to see how they play against BYU because the one thing BYU has, you know, quarterback's 25. They got guys who've gone the missions and come back, so it's an older physical team. Their coach likes to play a physical brand. I think that is a good week of prep for what Wisconsin's going to face at Iowa City in the Big Ten opener. But I just don't think – I think BYU's improved, but not enough to scare Wisconsin and Madison.
Jeff Patricus, you'll find all of his material at jsonline.com. He's got you covered, Wisconsin Badgers coverage all year long. Jeff, I look forward to this was my first game sitting side-by-side with you this last game. I look forward to doing it again next week.
Okay, Jared, talk to you later.
That will be a wrap on our third week of the Wisconsin Badgers Journal Sentinel podcast. Don't forget to find us on Apple Podcasts, iTunes. Go there right now. Rate us, review us, let us know what you think. And let's get this thing to as many people as we possibly can. Be sure to join us next week. You can join me next week during the BYU game. I'll be doing the live blog for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. You can find the link very easily on the Journal Sentinel sports page. Had a blast doing that this week for the New Mexico game. Very much enjoyed interacting with people as the game was going on, lending as many observations as I could get my hands on. We'll be doing the same thing for all the home games this year, I believe. And definitely this week, BYU 2:30 Central Time kickoff. From Camp Randall Stadium in Madison. I will be there. Jeff Patricus will be there and we'll provide you all the best coverage we can give you at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Thank you so much for listening. We will catch you again next week. Take care.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.